Alright, so I meant to get a handout printed off. Would you like a physical copy, or do you want it just sent out in an email?
Physical
copy?
Physical
copy. Alright. I'll get a handout sent to everybody. Maybe Wednesday for sure next week. Just kind of giving an outline and some notes about what we've been talking about with Genesis 1 through 11, just to kind of help remember it so that every time we don't have to keep going through, we won't do an in-depth review of all that like we have been in the past. So just some things on that handout will be kind of a breakdown of the different chapters and what we've kind of covered so far. Again, as we're thinking about the big idea, the big sort of theme of the Bible, and again, just the information that we've looked at there. So hopefully it'll be a helpful reminder for you. I'll print off a couple copies, and then I'll send out, I guess, as long as everybody's information is updated in the church directory, I'll send out an email so that you can have a digital copy as well in case something happens to your physical copy and you lose it. So I'll have a breakdown of Genesis 1 through 11. But today we begin with the next portion, the life of Abraham. And so obviously Sunday nights I've sort of been preaching through the life of Abraham. So again, we're going to kind of do a very much more overview of his life and why some of the important themes that we've already kind of established and developed, how they continue in the life of Abraham. But what are some things that you remember about Abraham? What kind of sticks out in your mind when you think of this great patriarch? Do what?
That was real attractive. That's what I said. But not to that.
Abraham was peak masculinity.
Peak masculinity, huh?
Oh, yeah.
What else?
Extremely faithful.
Extremely faithful. Yeah, that's a good one. We see this in the New Testament. He's often referred to as, especially by the Jews, you know, their father Abraham, because they were descendants of Abraham. But also, he's known for his great faith and his great trust in God and doing what God commanded at various times. So he was very faithful. What else?
His covenant with God. I guess it's the second major covenant that we see at this point.
Yeah, covenant with God. And which covenant specifically?
His multiple descendants.
And then there was also the covenant of circumcision as well. We see in chapter 15 and 17. Question. That's right. So we see two great covenants that God makes with Abraham. One, the first one, where God has Abraham cut the carcasses of the animals in two. That Abraham has this vision of these things of which are about to happen, that the nation of Israel that will come, that they will be captured and enslaved in Egypt for about 400 years, and that they would come back and dwell in this land of promise. And if you remember there, there's this great oven, this great fire, representative of God going, and he walks in between the carcasses. So they enter, and he enters a covenant with Abraham. That was Genesis 15. Genesis 17 is the covenant of circumcision, which they were to practice to show that they were children of God, that they were in this covenant with him, identifying as the children of Abraham. So there's another covenant there as well. What else do you remember?
The almost sacrifice of Isaac.
Almost sacrifice of Isaac. What's significant about Isaac?
He was his own only son.
Only son. Well, in a sense.
Well, the first 100 years into his life.
Did he have one before that? He had Ishmael first through Hagar.
Forgot about that.
So that comes about, yeah, well, it's kind of funny that you just mentioned the covenant. So the covenants with God are Genesis 15 and 17, and then right in the middle in Genesis 16 is when Hagar bears Ishmael. And again, sometimes we give Abraham and Sarah a hard time because it seems that Sarah gives Hagar her maid servant from Egypt, which is interesting considering the events of Genesis 12 in which they go to Egypt. Abraham is able to accrue a lot of wealth and a lot of servants. So the idea seems to be that Hagar came from their time in Egypt. But that Sarah is still barren at this point, and so therefore God has promised Abraham this great nation, but where is it going to come from if Sarah isn't able to bear children? So Sarah gives Hagar to Abraham to be his wife, and therefore they have their own sort of solution to this problem that you know, that they'll be, that Ishmael will bring about this great nation. And God does promise Hagar that Ishmael will be made a great nation of 12 princes, which is interesting because you see a lot of similarity and overlap between Ishmael and Isaac. Isaac later on begetting Jacob, and then the 12 tribes of Israel coming from Jacob and his line. So Sarah gets Hagar as his wife, and so we see that God wasn't specific in commanding yet that Sarah was going to be the one to bear this child. We find that actually later on, I believe it was in Genesis 17. We're going to look at a few passages here in a moment to kind of clarify some of this. But it's later on, I believe it's Genesis 17, it's revealed that Sarah is actually going to be the one to beget Isaac, and therefore the blessings and the promises are going to come through Isaac, not through Ishmael. So that will be another continued theme. What else do you remember? Oh, so we've established Isaac. Isaac is the is a son of Abraham. But what else? What else is important about Isaac? Mentioned the almost sacrifice. What about as it relates to Abraham's faith in willing to sacrifice Isaac?
I mean, just that he didn't even question God on the instruction to go sacrifice Isaac. He said, okay. And then, as far as we know, just willingly to come up the mountain with no doubt in God about it all, at all. And that entire story is foreshadowing the sacrifice of Christ.
Yeah.
Well, in Hebrews, it says that even though he hadn't seen it before, he knew that God could raise him.
Yeah, so in Hebrews chapter 11, we see the faith of Abraham that essentially he has to reconcile two promises or two actions, I guess, in this manner. One, on the one hand, God is commanding Abraham to sacrifice Isaac. Now, if he's going to have to sacrifice Isaac, well, that naturally means he's going to die. But God has promised that through Isaac is where the great nation, these many descendants, are going to come from. And so if Abraham kills Isaac, yet Isaac is also to be this great nation and these numerous descendants are going to come through him, these things seem to be contradictory, right? And it seems like they would clash. So Hebrews chapter 11, are you looking it up?
I'm
looking. Okay, yeah, read it for us.
It starts in verse 17. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it was said, "And Isaac, your descendant shall be called." He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type.
Okay, so summarize it for us. What is Hebrews 11:17 and following about the faith of Abraham?
Even though God had promised Isaac as the begotten son, and they finally received that after, I think it was a year.
Yeah, he had been promised. He had been promised in Genesis 17, and so that was. That's another thing that's interesting about this whole account. From Genesis 16, when Ishmael is born, 13 years transpires before we get to Genesis 17. So Ishmael is about 13 years old, and then it's promised that Isaac is going to come. So it was still going to be a little bit of time. Genesis 18, the Lord and the angels appear to Abraham and Sarah, which was mentioned last Sunday night. Then he says, within the next year, Sarah will bear Isaac, and that they should name him Isaac, which means, does anybody know what Isaac means? I have to double check. I think it means laughter, or he laughs, which is ironic because what did Sarah do when she heard that she would bear a child, even though she was old?
She
laughed. Sorry, continue what you're saying.
When they finally received their promise of Isaac, God said to go sacrifice him, and Abraham knew the power of God, that he could, raise him from the dead even, to, still fulfill that promise, even though he was about to sacrifice him.
That's good, yeah.
And also, y'all would think my words of this, but, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but also, Abraham hadn't seen anyone raised from the dead at this point that we know of. Yet he still had faith in God that even though he'd never seen someone raised from the dead before, then God would do it.
I don't think we know of anyone being raised from the dead at this point.
No, but it's interesting. Go back. Go back up Hebrews 11. Go back to the first time that Abraham is mentioned. Because we know that at this point it doesn't seem that there has ever been a resurrection, but there was a sense in which there was life came from death. It should talk about... Yeah, I should talk about the relationship between Sarah and Abraham.
Can you be more specific?
See, we're going on the fly here. This is what happens. We're exploring.
They start mentioning Abraham in verse 8, but...
All right, let's look here. Verse 11. He says, "By faith, even Sarah herself received ability to conceive, even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered him faithful who had promised." Oh, you know what? Let me double check. I think I'm thinking of Romans 4. Okay, yeah. Romans chapter 4. So Paul's argument here in Romans chapter 4 is justification by faith and how it was evidenced in the life of Abraham. Verse 16, he says, "For this reason it is by faith, in order that it may be in accordance with grace, so that the promise will be guaranteed to all the descendants, not only to those who are of the law, but also those who are of the faith of Abraham, who is the father of us all." Again, so we have this picture of Abraham being a father of faith, going back to what was said earlier about his faithful life. "As it is written, a father of many nations have I made you, in the presence of him who believed, even God who gives life to the dead and calls into being that which does not exist. In hope against hope he believed, so that he might become a father of many nations according to that which had been spoken, so shall your descendants be. Without becoming weak in faith, he contemplated his own body, now as good as dead, since he was about 100 years old, and the deadness of Sarah's womb. Yet with respect to the promise of God, he did not waver in unbelief, but grew strong in faith, giving glory to God and being fully assured that what God had promised, he was able also to perform." Verse 22, "Therefore it was also credited to him as righteousness. Now for his sake, not for his sake only was it written that it was credited to him, but for our sake also, to whom it will be credited, as those who believe in him who raised Jesus our Lord from the dead. He who is delivered over because of our transgressions and was raised because of our justification."
Hebrews 11 verse 12 does say, "Therefore from one man, and him as good as dead, were born descendants as many as the stars of heaven." So it's kind of that same language from Romans 4, the idea of being as good as dead.
So what Abraham, how do I want to go about doing this?
Based on what we just read and the language that's used, God was able to give life to the dead, but not in a resurrection sense of what we think about, like the resurrection of Jesus, but it was in a similar type and manner. What did it say? Who was dead in the passages that we read?
Basically, the fact that they could have kids at that point.
Yeah, Hebrews just says one man, but it's coming off the verse where it's talking about Sarah.
Abraham.
It says the deadness of her womb.
Abraham was dead because he was 100 years old. Sarah,
her womb was dead.
Was also dead because of her womb. So again, we see not a traditional resurrection in the sense that someone died and was raised from the dead, but that because Abraham, being so old as he was, and Sarah, whose womb was, as the text states, was dead because she wasn't able to bear children this entire time. And even after she also reaches an old age like Abraham, she's past the point of being able to bear children. So how do we see a type of resurrection if Abraham and Sarah in a way are dead based on their age and also the deadness of Sarah's womb? How might we see resurrection through that?
I think it's like the death of hope. Like Abraham and Sarah had no hope in that they could have children, which will lead to these great descendants. Like Sarah laughed whenever she found out she was pregnant with Isaac. And so it's not so much that a person is dead, but the idea, the possibility of something miraculous, that was dead until it wasn't. It's kind of like the same idea that you see whenever Jesus is in the tomb. Like, it's the, not the fact that just a man died, but all of their hope died with it. Where they're just like, okay, what was the point of all of that? Until they saw the miracle come through. And so it's just that, I assume you're getting to the common theme of where we see here and what we see throughout the whole Bible of life coming from death, whatever death may look like in a certain situation.
I hadn't thought of that. Giving life to hope and it seeming that there was hopelessness. I see that. What was the miracle in this case? The fact that Isaac was born, the fact that she could conceive, that even though they were old and practically dead, they could still beget life in Isaac being born. So
seeing the power of God in this manner, when it comes to Isaac being sacrificed, Abraham knows that God has the power to bring the dead to life because of the example of he and Sarah. And that, again, trying to wrestle with the idea that two contradictory statements, Isaac is the one who is going to be born to bring you this great nation, all the blessings are going to follow to him, but if you kill him and take him out of the way, well then, that only leaves one other possibility, is that if I kill and I sacrifice Isaac, which God is commanding me to do, but all these promises are still going to come, then God would have to raise him from the dead in order to make that true, right? And so then we kind of result in Hebrews chapter 11, 17, which was read, which Abraham had the faith. He was willing to sacrifice Isaac, and it was the angel of the Lord that had to stop his hand from making that come about. But yet Abraham was able to have that faith that God can even raise the dead to life.
It kind of makes, you know, when people read the events of Abraham sacrificing Isaac, our natural reaction is to always be like, oh my gosh, we could have never dealt what he did. We would have never put our son in that position. We could have never held a knife like Abraham did. And that's because in our situations, we don't understand what Abraham and Sarah went through as far as being at that age where they had given up the idea that they could even have children. Sarah's body should not have been able to, well, Abraham should not have been able to get Sarah pregnant. Sarah should not have been able to last a full-term pregnancy and then deliver a child at her age and with everything. And so their situation was so extraordinary that by the time this came about, Abraham was probably like, who am I to say no to you when you've already shown me what's possible? Because what they'd already experienced was beyond anything that a human could understand to begin with. So they were past the point of doubt like we are, because we've never seen anything like that. Just their experience to get Isaac, the fact that he was already 12 years old at this point when he shouldn't have been, you know, he should have never been there to begin with.
Yeah. Other thoughts? Again, I literally just made this connection as we were kind of going through it. Man, that's incredible. Other thoughts, questions? What's everyone thinking about? Lunch? Are we here for lunch?
One thing, you said the angel stopped Abraham's hand, but he didn't.
Oh, okay.
People always make that assumption, but he just calls him out.
He calls out and stops him. Well,
it says,
he stops.
It's Genesis 22:11. But the angel of the Lord called him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham, do not stretch out your hand against the lad. So someone pointed that out to me a couple of years ago. I was like, everyone always thinks like the angel just like grabbed his hand and stopped thinking about that.
That's a good point. Either way, he was able to get his attention to keep him from killing him. Yeah. Man, that's some good stuff. We don't have a lot of time left. So, like I said, this went in a completely different direction than I was intending it to go. We gave a good overview of Abraham's life, but really, let me see here. Genesis 12 to 25. It was mentioned the theme of death and resurrection. I had not, like I said, I had not intended to go that direction, but the next sort of themes, if you remember, I know this has been several months ago, so you don't have to remember. Genesis 12, 1 to 3 are sort of the promises that are given to Abraham as he is called out of Ur of the Chaldees. There are three, two of them are very apparent. The third one is more of a promise of blessing, But we get more specific in, this is the direction that we were going to be heading. They get more specific in the promises to Abraham. And really, this is kind of, like I said, this is kind of a guide to the rest of the Old Testament, is the fulfillment of three promises. Do you remember what the promises are?
The three promises?
Yeah.
That God would give him basically Canaan. He promised him land.
Yeah, the land, the great nation.
That you would have descendants as numerous as the stars, and that through your seed, all the nations of the earth will be blessed.
All the nations. Wow, I don't even know what that was. Trent, you're awfully quiet. You okay, man?
No.
He probably likes to go
there. Hopefully.
Okay, well, it's 10:19. So, again, like I said, this was the direction I was going. These, you find all sorts of these significant truths and things that we've talked about in the life of Abraham, but also the big picture items are the three great promises, the great nation that God would make of him, the promised land which he would give to him and his descendants, and that all nations would be blessed. And once we get to, again, the specificity, really we go back to Genesis 3:15, that in your seed all nations would be blessed, and again, the foreshadowing Christ. So we'll talk about this next time, unless we go off on another wild goose chase of discovery. Next week, no, not next week. Next week we have Todd Clippard, so I won't be teaching you all. But this is where we're going next time.
Todd's teaching us next Sunday?
Do it.
Is Todd teaching us next Sunday?
He's teaching the auditorium class, so we're just going to stay in there.
Okay.
But, yep, you're dismissed.